The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation. On MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi, this is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for joining us. May is Mental Illness Awareness Month. And as such, we have Dwayne Benson visiting with us. He was president of the Ventura County affiliate of NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, for the past 3 years. And he's been a member of the NAMI Board of Directors for 4 years and involved with them for over 10 years. He's with us today to talk about NAMI and to tell us a story of how the system works, or in his case, doesn't work. Dwayne, thank you so much for joining us. Not only do I appreciate you taking the time, sharing your expertise, but actually being vulnerable enough to share your story. So thank you in advance.
Oh, you're welcome, Maria.
So talk to us about NAMI, please.
Well, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is a nonprofit organization, and we really have two missions. One is to educate people, especially family members, but also people we call clients or individuals with mental illness, about the diseases, the diagnoses, the treatment, the medications, available resources, and a lot of things like that. The second part is we're here to stamp out the prejudice and discrimination. We call it stigma, okay? And it revolves all around the diseases, you know, whatever, whether it's bipolar or depression or schizophrenia. People are very afraid and very uneducated about this, so there's huge prejudice and discrimination. And NAMI is really a very grassroots organization. Our members come from families and from the mental health community. We hold classes and do presentations. We work with all kinds of people, family members, teachers, the public, law enforcement, to educate and stop the misunderstandings people have about mental illness.
Now, since NAMI has at the beginning national in its name, I assume that there's a network throughout the country, but then there's also affiliates that are local. Is that correct?
Yes, it goes. There's a national organization, and they are actually in charge of the state organizations. The state organizations filter down to about the county level, and we call ourselves affiliates.
Okay. So if somebody doesn't live in the Ventura County area, it doesn't mean that this information doesn't apply to them, because actually you're speaking about local, but there is a local everywhere, and then they're under the umbrella, as you just mentioned, of the state and the country.
Just about every county has a NAMI affiliate. There are a few outlying counties that don't, but mental illness is everywhere, and you know, we've been growing in leaps and bounds, but just about every county in the U.S. has a NAMI affiliate.
And so why did you get involved with NAMI?
Well, it's a long story, but in 2003, after a bunch of different diagnoses, my son was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. And at the time, I had no idea. I was clueless. And so, you know, I'm looking all over the internet to get information and help. And in 2004, I took the NAMI family-to-family class, and it was like a revelation for me. I began to understand what's going on. And since then, I was trained to become a teacher for the family to family. I teach provider education. I do CIT, which is crisis intervention team. We work with law enforcement. We train them. I'm a support group facilitator. I do presentations to grad and undergrad psych students at all of the local universities. And so I kind of jumped in with both feet, and then they invited me to be on the board, and then they made me president.
So, Dwayne, what was life like for you and his mother raising a son that is a paranoid schizophrenic?
Well, until he turned 19, there was no sign of it.
No way.
It's kind of typical with schizophrenia. Is my son is extremely intelligent. He plays, you know, like 9 musical instruments. He speaks 3 languages. He's very bright, and he did well in school. I mean, he had the regular normal stuff that kids go through, hormones and whatever. But there was nothing to indicate. Although, knowing what I know now, there might have been some signs. But with schizophrenia, it's like the kids, men at about the age 19 or 20, women a little older, 22, 23, 24, they have a psychotic break. They become very ill. And psychosis, unlike psychopathy, psychosis is just a break with reality. Okay, they're experiencing things and seeing things that you and I don't see and hear. But my son's been sick for a long time, and man, I've seen and learned a lot. And one of the most difficult things to deal with is mental illness is a behavioral illness. It exhibits itself behaviorally. There's no medical tests. There's really no set of criteria specifically. I mean, the doctors have what they call the DSM, which is their tool for diagnosing. Mm-hmm. But really, it's a disease like any other. Interestingly, there are more people with mental illness in this country than heart disease, AIDS, and cancer combined. But
really?
Yeah, but mental illness is still not treated the same. And there's massive discrimination and prejudice attached to it because of the behavior. Okay. Currently, my son's in jail. And the kicker to that is that I had to put him there. Part of his illness is a thing called anosognosia. It's part of the diagnosis. It's a medical term for the fact that he doesn't believe and cannot get his mind around the fact that he's sick. So he externalizes everything, and he believes, you know, the rest of the world is crazy and not him. And I can't say he's entirely wrong, you know.
That's a sad statement.
Well, we're all on the scale, really. Everybody has their anxiety. Everybody gets depressed. Everybody has mania. You know, I'm a skier. And so I go to the top of Mammoth and jump off a cliff there, then that's mania. Obviously I could get killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
But it's considered normal.
Well, yeah, my friend, I teach with a bunch of people, and my friend says, normal, that's a setting on the dryer.
Right. Well, and that's the thing with me about families. It's we're all dysfunctional. It's just to what degree.
Well, yeah, yeah. And you know. Who hasn't gotten a song stuck in their head, you know, or a lot of people like to think of it as like having a dream where it's not real, you know, and it gets stuck there. The words are there for that, you know, for you're listening to Steely Dan or Pete Townsend in your head. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for you to get rid of that, but it goes away and it's a happy thing. Okay. And a lot of what goes on inside of people's minds when they really do have mental illness, it's not happy. They get depressed. It's terrible. And you can't get those thoughts out. So
the common adage that I've often heard, and I don't know if it's still in existence, because the father of my children, my first ex-husband, which is such a lovely thing to be able to say, one of his brothers, right around 19, also had issues and ended up being awarded the state and basically was doped on Thorazine until he died from gangrene from an infection in his leg, which shows you the state of help that he was in under the auspices of the governance of California. And I remember my ex saying that whenever he felt stable enough on the meds, then he'd stop taking them because he thought he was cured or normal, and then it would be this vicious cycle.
Yes, it's a vicious cycle. And actually, the medications have improved dramatically, but there's still, you know, even the medication, we have a whole class that we teach just on medication, and it's hard. I mean, even people with diabetes don't like taking their medication. So mm-hmm. if you're taking a medication that, you know, is either sedating or dulls you, or my son says, oh, I can't play my guitar when I'm taking this medication. Because his mind is numbed to a certain amount, to a certain extent, but it improves his ability to deal with the rest of the world.
Right.
So the medication has improved, and really it's a tool that the doctors use. So, and
obviously under the auspices of psychiatry.
Sure, yeah. The psychiatrists are the ones who actually prescribe the medications, and then you have therapists that work with people, and then, I mean, there are so many resources required that it's really difficult, you know, to get help because it costs money. It's a resource. Resources are expended. And
so in terms of your son and you saying that he's incarcerated at the moment, how – I mean, obviously, as a parent and the father that's been involved in this cause for over 10 years, that had to be crushing to you because you would think that the system would have intervened before it got to this point. So do you mind sharing what happened and why he's behind bars?
Well, yes. And like I said, you know, the kicker is I had to put him there. And I hate when a medical problem becomes a legal problem. But his situation isn't unusual. You know, really, the Twin Towers Jail in L.A. is one of the largest mental institutions in the country. Probably nearly half of the inmates that are in jail are mentally ill. Not that mental illness excuses their behavior, but they could be treated and lead better lives. But the behavior that gets them there can often be criminal. You know, the criteria for someone to be put on a medical hold they technically it's called a 5150, which is involuntary treatment, is to be one of three things: a danger to yourself, which, you know, people commit suicide or threaten suicide, a danger to others, which is threats of violence or actual violence, or to be gravely disabled and unable to care for yourself. And, you know, my son has been in all three of those situations. He's been hospitalized a number of times, probably 10 times over the past 10 years. But in this particular case, my son is an obvious danger to others. He began emailing death threats to me, to his mother's husband. He would leave voicemails that were just horrible. And it's because he's not thinking correctly. But law enforcement deemed that sufficient to arrest him and put him behind bars. Unfortunately, the mental health system didn't see it that way, because really that's where he belongs, is in a hospital. But when the mental health officials interview him, he pulls himself together long enough to talk his way out of the situations. You know, when you go to an emergency room, one of the first things that they'll ask you if they suspect mental illness is, are you hearing voices? Well, my son's answer to that is, not any more than anyone else. So, I mean, he's smart enough to be able to talk to these people and talk his way out of it, you know, and he's able to maintain that good behavior long enough to avoid what we in the NAMI organization call the system. And I'm going to name a few names here that your listeners might be familiar with. You know, Jared Lee Luffner, Stephen Kazmierziak, James Egan Holmes, Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, Adam Lanza, Seung Hui Cho. These are people who, I don't know their background because you can't really know, but my suspicion is that mental illness is involved, and it's really, really difficult to get someone treated. And on the other side of those stories are the ones like the homeless mentally ill man Kelly Thomas in Orange County, which is another tragedy that could have been prevented if people, law enforcement, maybe mental health community, were just a little more proactive. Now, when people who are unstable commit these horrible acts or have horrible acts committed against them, everyone, including the media, have lots of questions. Why do these things occur? Didn't someone know? What can we do to prevent it? Well, and the answer to those questions is kind of simple, but not so simple. Because my son refuses treatment, he can't get it. Even when he falls within the criteria, but because the criteria are so subjective, you know, the mental health services makes these determinations, and because he can control his behavior for short periods, it's really difficult for me to do anything for him. He's an adult. And, you know, in reality, people's rights are protected for good reason. You wouldn't want someone locking you up in a psychiatric ward.
Right.
And, you know, I don't really have access to my son's medical treatment. HIPAA, the federal regulations, prevent it. It's kind of odd, you know, it stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, but it's really neither portable nor accountable. It's kind of information secrecy. It doesn't help my son. It doesn't help me help him. So when he started emailing death threats to protect him, you know, maybe from death by cop, and to protect people around him from violence, my last resort, and believe me, I tried everything, was to have him arrested and put in jail. And jail's not really where he belongs. He needs treatment and help. But, you know, everyone I've talked to about it says I did the right thing. I have to tell you, I thought long and hard about it, and I was literally beside myself when I filed charges against him. I wouldn't send my dog back to the dog pound. And yet I have to put my son in jail. It's horrible. It's just horrible.
Now, how is he being treated in jail? Is he being given his meds? And
no, because they won't give you meds unless you actually ask for them and accept them. So he's safe. The rest of the world is safe. He's doesn't like being in jail. And he's dealing with the general population. But, you know, and I keep thinking, what if something else even more horrible happened? He hasn't got any weapons, but he's 6'1", he's 170 pounds, he's a strong guy, 32 years old. So, you know, I just don't know. I don't know what else to do. I've dealt with the system. They wouldn't take him, so I put him in jail.
And that's going to be for how long?
Well, he's been in there since April. And he will have a hearing Friday the 13th, June 13th, and they will determine if maybe he will accept, as part of probation, treatment. So we'll see. He will probably be out by the middle, maybe the end of June.
So his time in jail without getting medication is obviously not only a detox, but there has to be withdrawals that are going on.
Well, but see, he doesn't really take medication. He refuses. He believes.
Oh, in general.
In general, he does not like the med, like your former husband's brother, I think
brother,
he said.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He would take the medication, then he'd get better, and he'd say, "Oh, I don't need this anymore." And he's been unmedicated for a long time, and it can't be forced on him.
So how is it affecting him on a day-to-day basis, do you know?
Well, I have a restraining order. Actually, California calls it a protective order. So I can't talk to him, but his mom reports to me. She talks to him all the time, and she's really trying to get him to accept that in order to get out of jail, he has to get some treatment. So, but, you know, he believes that he actually wanted to go to trial because he's in the mental state he's in, he wanted to plead not guilty. He doesn't see this as a problem. So he wanted to take it to trial, and it's going to go to trial, but his public defenders and the district attorney have worked out a deal, and actually we've worked very closely with them, and they're very aware of the situation. But it's now a legal problem, and they're not doctors, so.
Now, obviously, with the skill set that you have, because you're dangerous, I mean, because you know so much, like somebody such as myself, I wouldn't know where to turn, what to do, what the resources are, how to answer, how to cope. I can't see that there would be anything more that you could have done. This is the last resort.
Well, really, I tried everything. I had the crisis team, the Ventura County crisis team, interview him on three different occasions. And I think the final straw that really stressed him into the position he's in was he's been evicted multiple times. And the third time he got evicted, he just got really angry. He couldn't understand. He wasn't doing anything wrong. And he wasn't evicted because he didn't pay rent. It was due to his behavior. And people just can't tolerate his behavior. He becomes argumentative. He becomes angry. And eventually he crosses the line because he's just so angry, he becomes violent. And, you know, treatment with therapy and medication and social work would prevent that behavior, but he refuses those things. It's a catch-22, you know. So,
but people with mental illness, by and large, are they violent or are they docile?
No, typically people with mental illness, even schizophrenia, are not violent people. A person with mental illness is more likely to be the victim of a crime than a perpetrator. Many, again, because of their behavior, have no jobs, no education, no real means of support, and they end up living on the street under freeway overpasses because they have nowhere else to go, and it kind of leaves them vulnerable. They really are the victims in this huge mess. They really are.
And I think that's why there's so much either doubt or second guessing that goes on by the general public, because we see the ones that are the erratic errant and we think that they speak for the rest.
Well, and truly, you know, what you see people on the street corners with their signs, or we used to call them bums, they're homeless, mm-hmm. and they have nowhere else to go, you know, and so they're vulnerable, and they don't vote, they don't have any money, they're kind of disenfranchised. So, you know, NAMI kind of, one of our goals is to bring support to those people, you know.
And your support is through education and classes and awareness.
Yeah, we have a whole bunch of programs that we operate. And for the public, all of our classes are totally free. We have Family to Family, which is, it's actually a 12-week course, and I've taught that. Oh, I don't know, probably 15 or 20 times. And we have a class full of people. They come for 12 weeks. It's like a semester class where we teach them everything about mental illness. You know, and we're now teaching it here in Ventura County in Spanish, Familia a Familia. And we have just a pile of programs. We do provider education, which is actually teaching the people, the mental health professionals, how to deal with this. And you'd think that would be something that they would know, but we have social workers, we have MFCCs, we have doctors, we have just a bunch of people that come and take those classes. not only are they free, but for mental health professionals, we give continuing education credits. Okay, we have a program called In Our Own Voice. It's a presentation by the individuals with mental illness. We have a program called Friends in the Lobby, where we go and our volunteers work in the psychiatric institutions in Ventura County. And I got to tell you, the first time I went into Hillmont Psychiatric, I didn't know what was going on. It's a locked facility. You can't even get in. They have a little phone in a box so that you can call to get in. I didn't know anything about it. So our volunteers go and they help people deal with that kind of stuff. We work with teachers. We have a program called Parents and Teachers as Allies, which is hopefully something that will help people in, you know, younger people, people in school, recognize some of the early signs. We do CIT training for the Sheriff's Academy, Ventura, Oxnard, Simi Valley, Fillmore, Moore Park. All the police and sheriffs have been trained. We have one of the highest percentages of CIT trained officers in any county in the country. So
wow.
We're doing a lot of work. And, you know, it's a battle.
Well, for somebody such as yourself to have been in the trenches as you have been and to be at this stage of your relationship with your son, I would imagine it's exceedingly just, it must make you distraught.
Well, you know, I like to think I'm suffering from PTSD because of all the stuff I've been through, you know. And
well, yes.
And but my ability to cope with it comes from working with the people that I work with. NAMI is one of the greatest organizations I've ever dealt with, and I've been on the board of directors of several other nonprofits. I've worked with animals, I've worked with people, Ventura County Master Corral, California Wildlife Center, and it's funny because it's really easy to raise money for animals because they're cute and fuzzy and cuddly, mm-hmm, and people mm-hmm. are kind of prickly, you know?
Mm-hmm. So Dwayne, what is the best case scenario if somebody's listening and they're affected somehow by mental illness, either in their friends or relationships or themselves or family? What is the ideal that we could hope for or that we look for?
Well, I got to tell you, if anyone would like to help us or if someone out there needs help, contact our office. Contact the NAMI office. You can find us on the web. In Ventura, it's namiventura.org. In the rest of the world, you start at the national level, which is just nami.org, and you can drill down and find help or find a way to help us. And I really believe that the solution to this is education. Get people educated. Let them understand that it's not this, you know, terrible, horrible thing. It can be, and for a lot of people, it's very traumatic when their loved ones get sick because It you just don't know what to do. And we have lots of ways to help.
And NAMI is N Nancy, A Apple, M Mary, I Igloo. And we'll, of course, put that on our site and link to yours as well.
Yep. National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.
So what is the best behavior that one could expect from a mentally ill person who is cooperating, who is seeking therapy, who is taking their meds? Can they live a relatively, quote, normal, peace-filled, contented, productive existence?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we do with our In Our Own Voice program is it's the story of people who are successful.
Oh.
I mean, everyone's heard of A Beautiful Mind, which is the mm-hmm. story of John Nash, a professor. And there are people all over who are leading absolutely wonderful, productive lives, and by getting treatment, by taking their meds, by working with it. There's an entire group of people in Ventura County called the Client Network. And these people are the kindest, most wonderful people I've ever met. And they all have bipolar, they have schizophrenia, some of them, schizoaffective. I mean, there's a whole array. But these are people who are leading wonderful, productive lives. They work with us a great deal. And there's plenty of hope with the right treatment and the right medications. We have, there's a psychology professor at USC, Ellen Sachs. She wrote a book called The Center Cannot Hold. She's a professor, you know? And so there are plenty of examples of people with the proper treatment and with some understanding that do absolutely fine. As a matter of fact, they do better than me some days.
Well, I had the pleasure to interview Kevin Hines, who's one of the few suicide attempt survivors from the Golden Gate Bridge. And he was doing awareness during Suicide Prevention Week. And he fully admits in his address, I am mentally ill. I need help. He takes his meds. He does his therapy. He's married. He's written a book. He travels. And I'm thinking, damn, that's highly functioning.
Yes, yes. It is not what it used to be, where people would get locked up in an institution and, you know, they get warehoused and medicated to the point where they're, I mean, we used to call it the Thorazine shuffle, you know, because some of those early medications were extremely sedating, and that was the only way they could control people.
Right.
And the medications have gotten better. They're not quite as invasive. As a matter of fact, one of my pet peeves with my son was I was the med cop. Okay. I would make sure he'd take his medication. And then now they have medications, risperidone, for instance, where you can get an injection every 2 weeks or once a month, rather than having to take that medication every day
and have that struggle.
Have that struggle, yeah.
Wow. Well, Duane, thank you so much for your time again. Thank you for all of the information and actually for your message of hope, because that, we endeavor to promote as much good news as possible.
Yes.
I was getting a little depressed
it's a good
here.
News station, yes. And yeah, my story is a little sad, but it can work both ways. There are many, many success stories. And I just want people to know that, you know, no matter how bad it may seem, there is help and it can be solved. It's not a problem that can't be solved.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show, hoping you're helping to make this world a better place.
Talking, so call Maria. Her show is killer. You won't believe it, darling. There's long time listeners and first time callers. They love Maria, that's why they keep saying.
Give you something to talk about.